All right, good morning. Man, a rowdy group this morning. We can just stop, and if we just need to fellowship, that's fine as well. So that's... All right, we're, of course, in the book of Genesis, and we're actually getting into the text now. We've been quite a few weeks spending time laying a foundation for understanding Genesis. And remember, as we're going through this, we're not trying to teach through every single verse of the book of Genesis. We're trying to give you an overview, an outline, a foundation for how you yourself can study and use this book. And so we are in Genesis 1 and 2, and we finished last week talking about the issue of creation. How do we understand that? We affirmed a view of six-day literal creation in the Bible. We looked at some other views of Christians that they have espoused on that. And now we're going to talk about an issue that arises in Genesis 1 and 2 theologically that's really important for us to grasp, and that is of the image of God, the image of God. And I just want to say as well as we get started, I have taught this material at other times and places here. So for some of you, this might be a review. Some of you, this might be new. But I am trying to produce these notes in a way that's helpful for the long run to be reproduced elsewhere. So if you've heard this already, I apologize. Hopefully it'll be a good review. If you've not, I hope it'll be helpful for you as we think about the image of God. Now, when we talk about the image of God, we begin with the text of Scripture, and that gives us to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. After God had created night and day, the dry land, the seas, the sun, the moon, the stars, the plants, the animals, the fish, the birds, all in the animal kingdom, we read in Genesis 1 and verse number 26 these words. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness." So there's this phrase, image, likeness, similar idea. "Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. We should continue on because we see some of the same language appear again in verse number 28. "Then God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth.'" And even if we continue on in verse 29, "And God said, 'See, I have given you the human beings, I've given you every herb that yields seed which is on the face of the earth.'" Also, verse 30, "Every beast of the earth I've given," and so on. There is the sense in which humanity has been given a prime privilege and place in God's created order that arises out of these verses. So we want to talk about what it means that human beings are created in the image of God. The image of God. So that's what we're going to talk about here this morning. So in your notes there, we have the meaning of the concept. To be clear, just right away, human beings were created separately after animals. A human being was actually created. He does not come from a long line of primates, which would have evolved over time. So he's a direct creation of God, all right? A special creation of God. We should also note, as you read Genesis 1 and 2, and this is letter B, only the human being is created in the image of God, not animals. Only the human being is created in the image of God, not animals. However, we do note, of course, that Christians respect, there's your blank, Christians respect the creatures that God has designed. All right, all of the created order is made by God. We do not worship nature. We rejoice in it, but we do not worship it. It's God's work. It's God's handiwork. So we respect what God has created. Now, in a fallen world, of course, that does leave us with all sorts of questions about what we can and cannot do with the created order. But we do need to make a clear distinction in our mind. Human beings are given, according to Genesis 1, a prime place in the created order that is distinct from the rest of creation. And we're going to see that borne out in the language that is mentioned here. Now, when we talk about the image of God, letter C, human beings, therefore, bear a resemblance to their creator, although it is not a physical likeness. It is not a physical likeness. This, of course, is one of the greatest challenges in human history because humans want to make God like us or us like God. We either want to, you see this in all sorts of world religions. Either one, we elevate mankind up to the position of God, or two, we try to bring God down to our level. That's the way that every world religion struggles. And if we're not careful, we can also succumb to that kind of thinking. Do I have Romans 1:22 actually printed in your notes, or just the reference there?
It's printed. It is printed?
Okay. So this is what Paul warns about to the Romans, about what people naturally do. People profess themselves to be wise, but yet they've become fools. And here's how their foolishness is displayed. They change the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. This is what human beings often struggle with, is to bring God down to our level. So, in Paul's day, of course, as he wrote this, I mean, he could have been thinking about the Greek pantheon of gods, where the gods and the goddesses were in many ways like us, struggling with all the passions and desires and sinful behaviors. The Romans, of course, pick up on those Greek pantheon, and they adapt that into their way of thinking. And in many cases, of course, if you go in the Greco-Roman world, you would go and find literal images, statues of those gods and goddesses. And they just happen to look like either people or they look like animals. That's what you see. This is what Paul is warning about here. So when we talk about us being made in the image of God, we want to make sure that it's not us being elevated to a God status or bringing God down to our status in terms of physical likeness. That's not what we mean when we say that human beings are made in the image of God. We'll talk about what it does mean positively here in a moment. It's also important in Genesis 1 to see this. The image of God is true of both males and females. Males and females. It's not limited. That, by the way, is an important concept in our world. Now, and here in Western culture, especially United States, Europe, and we're struggling with elements of radical feminism where this concept kind of seems to us like a duh concept. Like, of course, men and women are both made in the image of God. But if you go to many parts of the world, historically and even currently, females are often designated to a much lower class in the way people think of them. So this concept of the image of God, actually, if I was teaching this like I was in Chad last October, we spent a lot of time talking about this because in their minds, women are second-rate citizens. And even citizen is a generous term, and they're not elevated in their status. And I'm not even talking about, feminism ideas. I'm just saying, like, they're viewed as like just unimportant in society. They're a means to an end. So you have to talk about that. So this is an important concept in the world today. And historically, Christians have been on the leading front of elevating both men and women to their God-ordained place as being made in God's image. So what is this all about? What do we mean by the image of God? Well, there's a whole bunch of things that come together, ideas that come together to help us to grasp the idea of people, human beings made in God's image. And that's where number two comes into play. Letter A, we have a soul. We have a soul. There is an immaterial part to us. That's something that does not seem to be true of the animal world. There is something of life in the animal kingdom. The breath of life is given to them. But it doesn't seem to be the same as what human beings have. Letter B, we are thirsty for spirituality. Human beings have a quest for something beyond the physical realm, which is why you find in every culture, in every time, in every place, people having spiritual ideas, realms beyond the physical. There is a metaphysical idea, something above our created order that we see around us. There are people that are trying to argue that certain apes have this desire. You know, what's the lady who's big on the chimps? What's her name? Jane?
Goodall.
Yes, okay. You know, she had a thing a while back where she was trying to say that these certain apes and certain chimps were going to this waterfall and watching it and having a dance, and she tried to say that that's something of spirituality like that of human beings. You know, I don't think that's the same thing, right? I mean, it's clear that animals have certain, I'll even use the word feelings, you know, there's stuff to them that, quite frankly, I don't fully understand, but it's not the same thing. All right, so there's a quest, there's a thirst for spirituality. Letter C, we also have the ability to express ourselves intelligently and in detail. In fact, we can say it this way, human beings can not only tell you what has been, they can tell you what is, and they can forecast what will be. But they can also say what might have been, what could have been, and they can even think about possibilities of what might be. No animal does that. All right, no animal does that. So our ability to express ourselves is amazing. We create and construct imaginative worlds that don't exist. And we can actually communicate those worlds from one place to another. Who here are like, you like fantasy literature? Anybody? All right. Yep, a few fellow nerds with me. Amen to you. All right. Okay. Actually, to a certain degree, if you watch a movie, you like fantasy. Because it's not real, right? You're already there. You just need to take this next step and actually read good fantasy, okay? That's another thing altogether, right? But the reality is, as you think about that, it's an amazing thing that someone can construct an entire world in their imagination and communicate that entire world that does not actually exist to someone else. That's an amazing ability that only human beings have. There's something about us that is reflective of God in that. Letter D, we have a conscience and a moral sense. There's a sense of right and wrong. Now, of course, we make movies about animals that supposedly have these moral senses of right and wrong. You know, get up, Bambi. You know, man has entered the forest, right? You know, and we're supposed. The reality is, every animal that I have come across doesn't have a moral sense of what's right and wrong. they'll kill anything, destroy anything, take anything, and they don't think a second thought of it. The only reason your dog doesn't rip into everything around your place is because they're afraid of you, or they know they get rewards for not doing it. Okay, there's no conscience in there saying, you know, I shouldn't go kill our pet bunny, all right? So they would if they could, all right? that's what they do, all right? So there's just not, it's not there in the same way that human beings have. And letter E, we are able to reason in an abstract way. And this goes beyond just the mere imagination. We can talk about theoretical concepts and we sit in a building that was an abstract concept that was put to concrete realities by people. Those are incredible achievements. So there's things to human beings that just set us apart from the rest of the created order. Implications of God's image in man. This distinction provides Christian answers to many subjects. Letter B, this is the Christian response to machismo and radical feminism. In other words, macho man that I will dominate everything, and also radical feminism. Both men and women are made in the image of God. So it says no to both of those. It also provides the Christian response to homosexuality and transsexuality. There is clearly a distinction in Genesis 1 from the opening chapter of the Bible that there is such a thing as man and woman and that they are distinct. And in fact, that distinction is made all the more clear in Genesis 2, where the woman is made from the man. This also helps us to see that every human being has intrinsic value. This helps us as a Christian to respond to racism and discrimination. Image of God, very important for those concepts. It also gives us a response to abortion and infanticide. And letter C, again, in our culture, this may not mean as much to us as it does elsewhere, although I think it does. Yeah. But a vulnerable person is as much in the image of God as any other person, mentally, physically disabled person in great suffering. Now, I do think actually this speaks to our culture today in a very specific way when you deal with certain mental handicaps. We're in a stage of life where people by selective abortions are eliminating whole classes of people because they don't want to have them be born into this world. So this is an issue. And the image of God says that is way, way, way outside the bounds. Again, if we were in other cultures, the whole physical handicap thing becomes really important. I was just talking yesterday to Pastor Chris Baker. He's the pastor at Hillsdale Baptist Church. We pray for them. They're in one of the churches we rotate through and pray for. Chris just took a trip to Ghana, Africa, and he was working there. Chris's background before he became Christian was in public education and dealing with special needs education. And so he went to Ghana with a group that is working with an orphanage that deals with people who have special needs, both mentally and physically. And he was basically going there to train and to teach the teachers how to address this. They have nearly 400 kids, all of them were special needs, who are brought into this orphanage. And one of the main reasons they do that is because, as Chris was explaining, in Ghana, it's really not a Christianized nation. For them, they view people with physical disabilities as somehow cursed, and they're a bad omen. And so he said, basically, the pattern is, people are ashamed if they have someone with mental or physical disabilities in their household. They send them off to an aunt and uncle someplace far away. They then just do the dirty work of essentially leaving them on the streets to die. That's just what happens. And so the image of God would say to that, absolutely not. Every person is made in God's image. So every human being. And so this also then gets also to the issue. This is helps us with the Christian response to euthanasia. We have no right to end the life of someone simply because they either feel themselves or society feels they are no longer wanted. Human beings, number five, are differentiated from God, among other things, by sexuality. So this is a difficult concept. Here's a little question for you. Does God have a gender?
In the Greek?
Theologically, does he have a gender?
Yes and no, because God is always referred to as male, but at the same time, the Holy Spirit is not.
How is God referred to as male? Is it simply as male? What other words are used to describe God?
Father.
Father. He's never described as mother. All right. So this is actually, by the way, if you want a little insight these days, this is the number one area where leftist Christians, and I use that word very loosely, leftist Christians are trying to say that, see, there is a difference between gender and sexuality. God has a gender, but he's not actually biologically sexed. All right. We do make a distinction in that, by the way. God is always portrayed as male, but he's not a sexual being like we are. Okay, so there is a distinction there between us and God. This, by the way, again, may not seem like such a big deal to us, but think about in like the Greco-Roman world where the gods and the goddesses were constantly involved in sexual activities. So this would speak right to that. So we are distinct in this from God. That helps us to understand some things. Sexuality is not evil, letter A. After all, as we just read, God commanded Adam and Eve to be fruitful before the coming of sin. That involves sexuality. But like I said, God is not the same as us in this area, but we are created as sexual beings. Of course, we also know in Genesis chapter 2 that God instituted marriage between a man and a woman without that marriage being sinful as well. So there is something good about us and our created creatureness in terms of marriage and the blessings of sexuality that come with that. But this does provide help us when you think about the image of God generally, and this is not an ethics class, so we're not going to get much further than this, but it's just in general, this provides a Christian response to debauchery, bigamy, and polygamy. Now, what is the unique role of human beings? What's the unique role of human beings? One of the key ideas that comes through in our text here in Genesis 1 is that human beings, letter A, have dominion over other living things. Dominion over other living things. And this leads us with this next statement, a very important one. The human being is the representative of God on the earth. It's a representative of God on the earth. This is an important topic. It's all over the Bible, both in the Old and the New Testaments. As people who bear the image of God, we have a ruling authority that is granted, that is given to us, that is unique among all the rest of the created order. So let's go to Psalm 115 for a moment. And again, is this printed in your notes? Is Psalm 115 printed, or did I just give you the reference?
Reference.
Just the reference? Okay, so let's turn to Psalm 115 together. In Psalm 115, the psalmist reflects back on God's creative power and glory and what God does. You see before verses 15 and 16, which we're going to get to, the context here, blessing upon the people of Israel, verse 14, may the Lord give you increase, you and your children. May you be blessed by the Lord who made heaven and earth. So the Lord makes heaven and earth. And then the psalmist here reflects upon God's creation, and he gives us some doctrinal insight on how to think about God and his creation of the heaven and the earth. So he's going to help us by giving us commentary on God's creative acts and power. Verse 16, the heaven, even the heavens, are the Lord's. It's his possession. But the earth he has given to the children of men. That's an amazing statement. God gave the earth to people. Okay? This is an incredible statement. God gave the earth to people. He gave the earth to human beings. The picture here is that God rules over all the universe, but he has given us the earth to rule. It's an astounding thing. And this means, number two there in your notes under letter B, this means that we are both ruled and rule. Both ruled and rule. There's a sense in which God rules over all. The heavens are the Lord's, but God has given us the earth. But we also exercise rule. We demonstrate God's reign over all when we as humans rule on the earth. Now, back in Genesis 1, we actually see this beginning to formulate through the writings of Moses. Genesis 1, 27, 28, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them. God said to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So we can say that one of the ways, here's your next blank, one of the ways we reflect God as image bearers is by ruling. This is one of the ways that we reflect God is by our rule. This comes out of Genesis. So notice the dominion and ruling language in verse number 28. You have things like fill the earth, subdue the earth, dominion. Those ideas, especially the subdue and dominion, are ruling or reigning terms. Those are things that kings do. Kings have dominion. Kings rule and reign. They subdue people and territory and places. They have dominion over realms and peoples and lands. Now, this is not an advocate for saying that we should have kings as government. What we're saying here is that God intended human beings to take possession of the earth and to use it for their good and ultimately for the glory of the Creator whom they reflect. Our dominion as humans involves us controlling creation, using creation, and creating new things in creation. That's part of our dominion. By the way, I'm not trying to pick on a certain class of thinking, but is this how radical leftism today in our world thinks about human beings? Not at all. This does speak to our culture. Now, is there a place for, like in the state of Minnesota, we were one of the leading states in the nation on this, of setting aside vast swaths of land for nature preserves and for hunting and for fishing and for having state parks? Is that an acceptable thing? The answer undoubtedly is yes. But guess what? We're the ones doing that. We're intentionally ruling by saying, we want to leave this alone so we can enjoy it in a unique way. However, that's very different saying, we want to leave this alone so it's untouched and pristine and no human being can ever enjoy it. That is not a Christian way of thinking. Not a biblical way of thinking. The whole of the earth is given for us to control, use, and even use the elements of the earth to create new things. Now, we need to note, number three, though, this is important. Our rule comes from God's rule. He has tasked us and blessed us with the ability to rule as a small picture of His great rule. Remember again Psalm 115, which we looked at in verse number 16 a moment ago. The heaven, even the heavens are the Lord's, but the earth He has given to the children of men. That's important because what that means is that our rule is not absolute on the earth. God sets the agenda. Right? So anything that we use in creation, it's underneath His giving it to us. God is God, could take it back anytime He wants. By the way, He's going to do that one day, right? He's going to take the whole of the created order and He's going to burn it up and remake it the way it should be. So He can do those things. He's in charge. We rule underneath His sovereign overarching rule. You need to hear this important distinction, therefore. God mediates, M-E-D-I-A-T-E-S, God mediates, another word you could use there is imparts or conveys. He mediates His rule on the earth through humans. So God rules, and He rules through us. We're representing Him as image bearers of God and our dominion over the earth. These ideas come, they're built out of Genesis 1 and 2. So you see the chart there, and those of you who have heard me teach on this before or seen me teach on this before, you've probably seen this as well, that you have God, there's the sense in which he rules over all, but he has mediates his rule on the earth through human beings. That's the idea there, that he has that rule through humanity. This helps us, by the way, with the understanding of God's kingdom rule in the Bible. Kingdom is related to dominion, to subduing. There is a sense in which there's two ways in which we use the word kingdom theologically. We use it in one sense that God has a universal rule or kingdom rule over everything. There's another sense in which we use the idea of kingdom of a specific rule or reign on this earth that God has ordained. So when we use the word kingdom as Christians, sometimes we mean God's universal kingdom, his rule over everything. Other times we speak of God's mediatorial kingdom, which means that God has mediated his rule. Mediates, conveys, imparts, transmits from God to through us on the earth. Now, this is important not only in Genesis, but throughout the storyline of the entire Bible. As we read through Genesis, when we get into Genesis chapter 3, we discover very quickly that Adam and Eve fail in their rule, but specifically Adam. So Adam is told to have dominion over everything on the earth. And we can just simply ask the question, how did Adam do in having dominion over everything on the earth? Thumbs up or thumbs down? Right? This is a big thumbs down. It did not work out well for Adam. He was given the task to lead his wife, to lead in the garden, but he failed. He was given the task to rule over the animals, but he failed. And you can see on the chart there that there's a, I think that's in your notes as well, is that chart between God, Adam, Eve, and creation. Is that there in your notes? All right, you see there's a reversal that happens here. The intention was that you'd have God ruling over Adam, who would rule over his wife Eve, who would rule together over creation, which ultimately we see in the serpent. And instead what we have is the reverse happening. The serpent speaks to Eve. Eve speaks to Adam. Adam disobeys God. An entire reversal occurs in Genesis chapter 3 of God's intended mediating rule on the earth. So there's this reversal of what happens. Adam fails in his task to mediate God's rule on the earth. Instead, he becomes ruled what he was given authority over. The rest of the Bible is a story about how God is working, here's your blanks, to bring about his rule on the earth. The rest of the story of the Bible is about how God is working to bring about his rule on the earth. Ultimately, that will be completed by one man, Adam, Jesus Christ, who will impart rightly God's rule in a kingdom on this earth. That's if you want to know the storyline of the Bible, that's it. Mankind failed in its ability to rule on the earth, and they did so by disobeying God. God's going to work about to restore that, to make it right, and he's going to do it through a new man, a new representative on the earth, Jesus, and with his people. Of course, 1 Corinthians 15 describes the end of this process, and you can read that on your own time. In between where Adam failed and the full coming kingdom of Jesus Christ, we have kingdom realities now. Speak about the mediatorial kingdom. So I'm going to do this very quickly. I've taught on this elsewhere. If this is new for you, chew on it, and then you can ask me questions later. In between Genesis and the end of all things, we see God's plan to mediate his rule. As God's plan unfolded, it becomes clear that we as human beings continue to fail at ruling God's earth. That is the story of humanity until Jesus comes again. We fail, we fail, we fail. God attempts to bring about his rule through human beings. Human beings display their sinfulness. And God says, all right, I know that isn't going to work. Let's try this. That doesn't mean that God is just pulling it out of a hat. And he's demonstrating in his plan for humanity that we need Jesus. We need his appointed messenger. So we see, number two, that God initially worked to administer his rule through human conscience. Human beings fail miserably. By the time you get to Genesis 6, the whole earth is filled with violence. Then after the flood, and Noah and his three sons come off the ark with their families, God worked through human government in the covenant God made with Noah. How did that work? Did human beings submit to the rule of God and rightly rule the whole earth? What happens? They gather together in one place, and they have the Tower of Babel incident. Their collective government actions were a direct assault against God's authority. So God scatters them, and then God planned to work through Abraham and his descendants. But we can also see that they did not follow God. All you need to think about is what Joseph's brothers tried to do to Joseph. There's a collective display that even the descendants of Abraham fail. Then God planned to work through one nation, Israel. Israel is called to be a kingdom of priests. By the way, that's a fascinating statement in Exodus 19, 5 through 6. Kingdom, a priest is someone who is a mediator who goes between God and other human beings. Israel was not only to function as a whole for that, for themselves, but for the, all of the nations. They were to display the glory of God to the nations. They didn't even make it hardly out of Egypt, and they were already failing in that. In fact, they didn't even get to the end of Exodus 21, and they're already failing that. You know, God calls them up to Mount Sinai and says, "You're going to be a kingdom of priests," and they see the mountain and it's covered with smoke and, you know, fire and stuff, and they reject their position right away and say, "Moses, you go do that for us. We don't want to do that." And this is terrifying. And very soon after that, while Moses is up on the mountain, they become just like the foreign nations around them. They make a god out of gold. I mean, it's like from day one they demonstrated their failure as a nation. So that did not work. So God eventually promised that Israel, number six, would have a king and a kingdom that would rule forever. We're eventually going to study 2 Samuel 7 in our time on Sunday mornings in that. And yet Israel failed in that. They divide their kingdom. They have kings that begin to rule for their own glory and not for the glory of God. The people of Israel go after false gods. They become more like the pagan nations around them. And God promises that there would be a Messiah, and this, of course, is yet to be fulfilled fully. Jesus Christ, of course, has already defeated the power of sin. He's already defeated Satan, but one day he will come and exercise his full dominion on the earth, where he will rule and reign over all things, and it will culminate with a new heavens and new earth. And by the way, one of the questions some people have is, well, what about the church? Is the church... you know, is the church actually mediating God's rule rightly on the earth now? The answer to that question is not really. We demonstrate over and over that we need the full redemption that only Jesus can bring. And he will one day bring that, redeem us. So Genesis 1 and 2 and into Genesis 3 help us to understand this idea of God's image, the people being made in the image of God. It helps us understand that we're different, unique than the rest of the created order. One of the chief ways that's displayed is our ability to rule and have dominion on the earth. And one day God will perfect that through Jesus in his kingdom. All right, I am out of time, so I need to stop. But I wanted to get through that material today. We'll continue talking a little bit more next week on Genesis 1 and 2, some other theological concepts that come out of that, and then press on into more of the book. Thank you for coming. You are dismissed. We'll see you in the worship service shortly.